I'm actually very aware of my Midwesternness now too, because like I was with my brother Gabe the other day, and we were in Lafayette, Indiana, and I was just like hyper aware of how many times I said, "Oh, sorry, oh."
Hello and welcome to the Super Bayern podcast. Despite being far from their best, Bayern Munich ground out a 3-2 win over rivals Borussia Dortmund this past weekend, going 4 points clear at the top of the Bundesliga table in the process. But the Bavarians have a good bit of work to do, especially in the defensive end, as they come to the end of the calendar year and prepare to face Barcelona in the Champions League tomorrow. I'm Benjamin Scott, and I'm here to talk about all that with my friends Garrett Kerber.
Hey, everybody.
And Sebastian Zimmerman.
Hi.
Well, we got to start by talking about the big game that took place over the weekend. Der Klassiker, for all of our American fans listening. I know that title does get a little bit of hate, but for a match that's called the Klassiker, especially if you're a neutral, I mean, what a game that was. It was electric from start to finish, had goals on both ends. Neither team held back at all. It was attack, attack, attack. And honestly, there were times in the game where Borussia Dortmund, credit to them, looked like probably the more threatening team, and Bayern's defense really struggled. I mean, really, really struggled at times as a unit, as a whole. But I think especially the star signing Dayot Upamecano really had a tough match trying to handle Erling Haaland, which isn't his first time there. So, Garrett, why don't you talk to us a little bit about Bayern's defensive struggles in the game? Were they really as bad as some people have made them out to be? Do you think Upamecano deserves to be singled out like some have? I mean, what was going on there?
He had a rough go of it that night, and I think he deserves a lot of the criticism he's been getting, because he really struggled both to keep up with Haaland, but also to kind of just. He was always, it seemed like, in the wrong place at the wrong time, and while it doesn't worry me going forward, really, because I think we've seen the quality of Dio, but I think in these big matches it just is amplified a little bit more, and I get that it's been almost half the season, and you want players to really step into their role and be exactly the player you thought you were buying right away. But I think, you know, they are human, and it takes a little while to kind of get your legs under you and really get back to feeling the way that you want to feel when you play. And I think we saw that with Lucas Hernandez, who I think was, outside of maybe Thomas Muller, the best player on the pitch for Bayern until he got injured. And then it took him a long time to start to become one of the better players at Bayern. We saw the same thing with Leroy Sané. He struggled in his first season, and people were all upset about signing him again. And I think we're kind of seeing a similar situation with Dayot Upamecano. I think he'll get it together, but he did struggle a lot, and part of that too is just because the whole back line didn't look in sync. Looked like they were just kind of struggling to clear the ball. I don't know if there was something wrong with the pitch or what, but it actually seemed like both teams had a lot of struggles, maybe for slightly different reasons, but they had a lot of struggles clearing the ball and just getting it out of their end. So there's some real concerns as far as Bayern goes, with how their defense is going to hold up against the better competition that they face. You're not going to face that much better than Erling Haaland, but they definitely showed some vulnerabilities that I think they're going to have to get fixed pretty quick if they don't want to be exposed in Champions League. Mm-hmm. I think they're in good shape in Bundesliga, but for right now, but yeah, they, I don't know, and we'll talk about it too, but I don't know if Kimmich being out, if that's causing more than maybe we thought it should or think it should, causing more issues on the on how the defense plays. But there was just a lot of time and space for a lot of guys on that Erling Haaland goal, which first of all was an amazing shot.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't give a guy like that much time and that much space, and I don't care what reasons there are for why he was so open for so long, but it's still, that seems like a systemic issue with how that back line was playing, more so than just like, oh, it just kind of happened that way. So yeah, there's some concerns there. I'm not quite as concerned as a lot of people are, because I wasn't as concerned as a lot of people were when Flick was in charge and Bayern were giving up a goal in the first 20 minutes, like 7 or 8 games in a row. You know, it's just, I kind of feel like if Bayern's forwards are playing well, and I think they definitely were against Dortmund, then there's not so much of a worry on my end as far as defense goes. Although I know that, and I still know that the defense is, you have to be able to count on. So it is a concern. I'm not as concerned about it as a lot of people are. Sometimes I think people just want to make sure that they're not over the top happy about things, so they have to have something to complain about. So, that's my 2 cents.
Yeah. You brought up a good point. I think that's worth talking about. It's, Joshua Kimmich. And we did talk about, last week, talked about the influence he has on this team and how much his, absence would impact the way they play. And so, Sebastian, I mean, just kind of bring that up again, you know, do you think that a lot of what was going wrong was, you know, because of the absence of Joshua Kimmich? And you know, really talking about the way that Julian Nagelsmann has this team playing with this 3-2-4-1, the midfielders are especially important right now. And without, you know, our best midfielder, at least probably the best considering it, like, most defensively, do you think Kimmich had a big impact, like the lack of Joshua Kimmich in midfield really had a big impact on the defensive stability of Bayern? Or do you think maybe even this was the case where Nagelsmann should have maybe not abandoned, but relied a little bit less on this new tactical system that he's using?
Actually, I would say, first, I think this didn't even look as much like this new system than it had looked in earlier games, which was kind of interesting. While this was a very intense game with a lot of back and forth, a lot of running around the place at top speed, basically. This was a game where Davies, well, kind of stayed back kind of more than usual, actually. So, but of course, I would still say that it's valid to say that our central midfielders are very important in either system or in any hybrid mixture of these two, formations, basically. I think it would have been good to have had Kimmich in his top form there. But of course, we also need to keep in mind that even if we would have had Joshua Kimmich there, there's no guarantee that he would be able to be at the top of his game again right away, because the last time we had seen Kimmich, he was not quite as good as we would like him to be, or as we have grown used to seeing him. So, yeah, I guess, of course, it would have been great to have a very good Joshua Kimmich there, but I'm not entirely convinced that he would have been at this level if he had been there, even if he had, like, played the last handful of games before that. I really hope when he comes back, his mind is he's in the right state of mind then again. He's not, his mind is not occupied with all this Corona stuff and whatnot, and he's going to be the Joshua Kimmich we know. And of course, that guy could really have certainly helped us there, because I think in this game, it's really important to have For people to know where the other guy is next to me, to have a good orientation on the field, what's going on, who's in front of me, who's behind me. And this only comes with playing with the same guys a lot of times. And this was not our standard lineup, especially not in midfield there. So that is definitely a problem. And I would say that this certainly was a very hard job for Tolisso, and he did a reasonably good job about it. I would say actually, because he was probably like average compared to the other guys on the field there. Yeah, I think this was a very good, very interesting game, but it was interesting also how like both defenses really struggled there. I would say that this is a general thing that I would not only say about Bayern, but the Dortmund defense had kind of the same issues, just because this was so up tempo, this was so intense, and nobody really, really let up, right? So they weren't waiting in that defensive kind of formation. There was a lot of gegenpressing, and they were always taking every opportunity they could get to, play the fastest kind of football they could play in any given situation. And that was both great to watch, but also it's something that tends to expose defenses, of course, because there's just no time to catch your breath, to kind of reorientate yourself, to settle down and see, okay, let's get this all in order. Here I am. Here are the other guys. Let's just wait for a moment. So there were a few moments like that. So I think this is also just a product of the kind of approach both teams had in this game that it made this became so difficult for both defenses.
Yeah, it was a, like you said, a strange match, a very, very back and forth, very high tempo. And like you said, defenses tend to struggle. I know if Tim was on, he'd be upset because he's always talking about, you know, Bayern leaking in goals and getting tired of seeing that high line. But it's kind of endemic of the way the game was played. Now, I'm actually going to come back to you, Sebastian, because I think from a neutral point of view or from an outsider's perspective, the biggest, and especially from a Dortmund fan's perspective, the biggest talking point of the game would have been the referee and any, you know, quote-unquote issues that the referee may have had. And so, Sebastian, I'm wondering, in the States, this has been a major talking point, and it seems like especially people more sympathetic toward Dortmund or just non-sympathetic toward Bayern, that's all they want to talk about. How is this game being viewed in Germany? Is the referee bearing a lot of blame and responsibility for how the match played out?
Yes, I would say there definitely is a lot of talking about the referee here in Germany too. That's definitely true. For a bit of context there, because I don't know if all of our listeners will know this. The referee, Zweier, he was part of, or kind of a small part of, that big scandal we had, like, when was that? I think 2004 or something. I forgot the number now. A long time ago, there was a huge scandal in Germany where a referee took money to manipulate games, and Zweier was kind of his assistant. He was in court about that, I think, but there was never a decision against him. Nothing could be proved, basically. So it went nowhere, but he's not proven innocent, but he's also not quite proven guilty. But most people agree that he had something to do with that. He probably played a very small part, but he played a part in that, and a lot of people are of the opinion that a person like that should not be a referee in the Bundesliga anymore. And I have a lot of sympathy for that argument, basically, because I feel like that's really a huge problem, because it just invites this kind of discussions that we are having now. Because you will always be suspicious. You will always question, was that all correct that this guy did, or did he have some kind of ulterior motive there? Of course, we also need to keep in mind that it's way ridiculous to assume that Bayern had something to do with that, and that's also, of course, something that some fans of other clubs, especially Dortmund, of course, would come up with here. Of course, that's just completely ridiculous. How crazy would you be if you were the club and you would risk something like that when it's not even like so important to get every win in the Bundesliga, because you kind of could live with not winning the Bundesliga at once, and also sometimes you win very clearly, so why would you do this like in the middle of the season? Of course, this is complete nonsense. So to get this out of the way, so I can see that there's a discussion, why would you give such a referee this match? But I think we really need to get this out of our minds when we're talking about how we evaluate these two important situations in this game. And looking at that, going back to that, I think, I mean, you could do this the other way around. You could very well, I think, say, okay, Reus gets that penalty, and we don't get it. I think that would also be kind of fine, actually. So yeah, it is fine, really. I feel both decisions can go either way. For how I understand things. So yeah, this is a bit of a bad situation, because if you didn't have this referee there, there would just be way less talk about these two situations, and there would be more talk about what a great game this has been. And this would be more interesting, and this would be better for the Bundesliga. This would just be better for everyone if we could talk more about that, actually, okay. I feel.
So to talk about the two points that you brought up, and if you're listening and you're unaware, there was an instance early, not super early, but earlier in the match where Lucas Hernandez put in a challenge on Marco Reus. It was kind of from behind, kind of from the side. Reus went down. The referee ended up not calling it a penalty. And then later in the game, Mats Hummels had a handball called after, it was a couple, almost like over a minute later, it went back to VAR. They reviewed it, called it a handball. And I think that anyone would look at that and understand how a Dortmund fan can feel hard done by, because if the roles were reversed, yeah, we would be pretty upset. Now, I will say that the DFB has come out and they said the first foul on Reus, or not foul, as it ended up being called, didn't even matter. If it went to VAR, they wouldn't have given a penalty anyway, because they would have just determined that Haaland was offside in the buildup, so it doesn't matter anyway. Obviously, that's not going to appease the Dortmund fans, because number one, it didn't go to VAR during the match, and second, because that doesn't change the fact that they went to VAR for a handball that I don't think anyone on the pitch even like thought it was going to be a handball, and so it did kind of come out of nowhere. And so, yeah, it was a good win for Bayern, a big win for Bayern in the Bundesliga, but it's definitely marred and overshadowed by these referee issues. And so I guess, Garrett, my question is, how do you feel about that as a Bayern fan? And what do you think is the proper response to everything going on?
I think that there is something to be said for saying this guy can referee matches, but matches of this magnitude, you probably want to keep him not involved, because as you said, Sebastian, it becomes an easy, you know, point of conspiracy, because you can say, you know, well, he was involved with that match fixing thing, and I think it was, you know 17-18 years ago, so you know, he might be doing it. Here he is again, he's back, and I just don't think, just from a standpoint of wanting your referees to have a good reputation and to be kind of protect them from having, I mean, they have all their decisions questioned anyway, but then to have their motives questioned as well starts things down a really bad path. But I think based on the match that I was watching, and granted, I wasn't aware that this match fixing thing was a thing until they started bringing it up. But I, watching the match, it seemed to me like I thought he did a pretty good job in the match, all things considered. And if anything, he was equally bad both ways. And I think that the biggest thing was there's a lot of intensity in this match, and it's what made this match so good, is that it seemed like both teams were really going at each other, which I feel like we've been missing from a Bayern Dortmund match for some time now. A couple years, it feels like, since there's really been that competitive animosity between the two clubs, and it seems like on the pitch anyway, and it seemed like this is starting to kind of get going again. That penalty that they thought should have been called for Royce, I mean, I think it really does depend on who your allegiances kind of fall towards. I think most neutrals and Dortmund fans think it was a clear penalty, because neutrals tend to be anti-Bayern because Bayern wins everything, and that's fine. But I think as a Bayern fan, I look at that and say that's a play in the box that doesn't get called all the time. And you could easily look at that and say, you know, a guy he was trying to draw the foul, mm-hmm. and you know, all sorts of things. And then you have that he was, you know, Haaland was offside anyway. But on top of that, there's plenty of other opportunities within a match to change things. And I thought there was a couple times where Bayern, I think early on, there was something, it looked like a handball that wasn't called in Bayern's favor early in the match. I'm trying to remember what it was, but maybe it's not even good to bring it up since I can't remember when it was. But I just think that there's several moments in a match where you can look at and say, I don't like that call. That was a bad call. It's a totally different thing to say it's a bad call, and therefore I'm going to question the integrity of the referee and right. the people who put those referees in place. And so I think that all things considered, it's frustrating that becomes a talking point. And I think what is most frustrating to me is not that that's a talking point so much as it is that became mostly a talking point because Dortmund players brought it up in post-match interviews. Mm-hmm. That to me is more disturbing, because I expect to hear that kind of thing from fans, because that's what we do as fans. We speculate and we get mad when our teams lose. And then we look for people to blame because it can't be our team that's really to blame in some situations. And so it's disturbing to me that not only did they go to, they made a lot of bad calls and that's why we lost. They made a lot of bad calls. That's why we lost. And I think it's probably worth pointing out that he was involved in match fixing. Maybe that's going on. And I think Jude Bellingham was one of them, especially the one that I'm thinking of. And I think he's actually being punished by the DFL for those comments too. So apparently somebody has kind of the same point of view on that.
Yeah. Yeah. It is mostly just a shame that, you know, the comments and everything overshadowed what was a really good match, even if it did go in Bayern's favor. And if I could, it is a shame to see Dortmund kind of acting like Dortmund again. I think that the way Erling Haaland handled his post-game interview was very, you know, he didn't try to seek blame. He said, you know, I should stop talking. I'm all emotional. Bellingham, he's a kid. He's going to say stupid stuff. Yeah. So I don't think that anyone can be too upset about him. If anything, you know, you want your players to show passion, but, you know, mentally, Dortmund often aren't up to the challenge, and I think after the penalty was called against Hummels, I think we kind of saw that again. They didn't totally, you know, just completely fall apart, but I think if they would have continued playing at the level they were playing early in the game, they could have got something, and I just don't know. Mentally, they weren't up for it. I don't want to take anything away from the way they played because I thought it was great, but I guess I'm not totally surprised at that point.
Yeah.
With how the game ended.
And I actually really kind of liked that Marco Rosa got the red card. I actually kind of like the way that he, I mean, I thought he had Dortmund set up really to take advantage of how beat up Bayern were and whatever struggles they had on the back line. And so that red card to me was like, oh, okay, cool. Like, this is a coach that's going to kind of take all that angst and try to turn it into something.
Right.
And it was, and you and I were talking about it during the match too, like how he basically just had a higher point of view off the bench when he had to get sent off. I mean, he didn't have to go very far. They could still hear him. And red cards for coaches is weird, but I did like, I like that he's bringing that intensity. And so there is a little bit of, kind of some excitement to think that, you know, this, he could potentially get Bayern or get Dortmund back to where they are actually contending with Bayern. But like that should have been the talking point.
Right.
And it seemed like rather than take that and say, hey, our coach is behind us 100%. Some of the players took it towards, oh, this ref is bad.
Mm-hmm.
And then they fell back into old habits of just kind of, I don't want to say quitting, but they certainly lost whatever momentum they had earlier in the match.
Yeah, I guess my final point before we move on from the Dortmund game is essentially just this question of where has that Dortmund been in Europe all season?
Yep.
If we want to talk about, you know, what can be done with the Bundesliga, Dortmund, Leipzig, these other top teams have to be doing better in Europe for the Bundesliga to do better. It's not just a case of, oh, let's, you know, make Bayern weaker or whatever. If that Dortmund team shows up to play in Europe, they beat most teams at the end of the day. And that's all there is to it. And so hopefully we'll be seeing something like that soon. But let's go ahead. Oh, go ahead. What were you going to say?
Well, I was just going to say, I think to Sebastian's point about like, why would Bayern want to be involved in a match fixing sort of situation, how some people have kind of taken that that thread and kind of ran with it is again, kind of what you're saying. What it's actually good for Bayern if Dortmund is a serious contender, because that makes the Bundesliga look better and helps bring eyes to those matches and so Bayern can, you know, not just be the only one dragging the league along.
Right.
And so like if Dortmund is better and they're doing better in Champions League, Leipzig, I mean, as currently we're recording, they're leading in their match against Manchester City, which is great. But they need to do better, and I think we're seeing that sort of thing happening. And it seems like we see that every once in a while. I hope that they can continue that, and I hope that all this referee talk doesn't detract from that in some way.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. Let's talk about tomorrow's match when Bayern Munich will host, I would say, European giant Barcelona, but that doesn't feel entirely appropriate at this point in time. But what has, in you know, historically been a really big match is really not that exciting this time, Sebastian. I mean, Bayern have gone 5-0 in their group stage in the Champions League. They've been nearly perfect. They have 15 points. Barcelona are in second on 7. And really, the only team that absolutely needs a result is Barcelona, because if they lose and Benfica win, well, then Barcelona drop down into the Europa League. Now, that being said, Nagelsmann has said that Bayern are going to take the game seriously tomorrow. They're going to play the best possible lineup. So, Sebastian, I'm curious about how you are envisioning this match going. And when Nagelsmann says he's sending out the best 11, do you think that means we're seeing a full, you know, Alphonso Davies, Leroy Sané, Musiala, Müller, Lewandowski? Like, do you think we're seeing actually the best 11, or do you think he'll rotate at least a little bit? And then also, man, what's the answer in midfield tomorrow? Because Leon Goretzka is out, Marcel Sabitzer is out. Do we finally get to see Marc Roca? What are your thoughts, Sebastian?
So when we're thinking about how this match is going to go, there are really those two big question marks. The one is the Bayern lineup, and the other one is, does this Barca team have enough of a soul, basically, to make this an interesting contest? And I'm not so sure. I guess I want to, for now, focus on that first one you mentioned. Yeah, it's a bit tough there. I think you cannot even rotate too much, actually, because you just, there are not so many young guys you would really drop in there in a Champions League game, because in a Champions League game, you have a limited kind of roster, so you cannot, like, get a lot of the guys in who are usually not even on the bench. You cannot even properly do that. So the only thing you can really do is get a couple of the guys on the field who are usually on the bench, but the bench is pretty depleted as it is, so your options are kind of limited there. I feel like this is probably the right time to try Musiala kind of as a six, as a guy next to our proper number six, basically. This could be interesting because Nagelsmann has been shying away from that a bit, I feel, and we have talked about this. He has mentioned that he definitely finds that interesting, and he knows that Musiala has done that in Flick's system, but his system works a bit differently. So yeah, this might be a good opportunity to try something out with Musiala, I guess, as unfortunate this might be for a guy like Roca, of course. So you would probably only want one. You could probably combine the two, but I don't know if that's the way to go. I think I would go with Musiala here, because that's a good combination of not too much risk, but also interesting enough, something that you would not try in any game. Because, yeah, Musiala has played on the six before, but, yeah, Nagelsmann sounded, when he talked about that, both interested in it, but also a bit cautious regarding that. So I feel like this might be a good opportunity to try Musiala basically on the six, because there's really not much you're going to lose in this one, and it's also a game on an interesting level, right? So it's not just a very weak opponent, of course. So this could be interesting. Beyond that, there's just not many interesting things you can try here, because there are just not many people on the bench that you could bring in, because yeah, there are just not many very interesting options. Either the guys are not even part of the Champions League squad, or they are injured or whatever, so the options we have are just not all that interesting. I guess you could maybe argue for Omar Richards, maybe that could be interesting. You could maybe argue for Nianzu, but yeah, it's just not like we have a huge number of guys who would be kind of not too far away from our usual 11, but also far away enough, basically, that it's not like boring, that it's not even worth mentioning as something interesting to try. That's kind of the problem here, because we're missing so many players, really. It feels like it's probably like 10 players or something like that. I didn't count, let me count, it's 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 actually, so we are missing 7 players here, and that's just a lot, right? And a lot of the guys you would say, this guy could use some minutes, this guy would be interesting, a lot of those guys are just injured or not able to play in some shape or form.
Yeah, and it's like Sabitzer, for example, I think is one of those players that you would love to see start this game, get some much needed minutes. But of course, he's injured. And really, it's not only Bayern's lineup that you look at, and it's hard to find interesting things. I mean, we talked about this already, but this match as a whole just doesn't have the appeal you would usually expect of something like this, partially because of the lineups that are available for both teams, partially because of, I mean, Bayern already just sweeping and dominating this group. However, Garrett, I do have one more thing I want to talk about before we go. Robert Lewandowski is on 9 goals for this group stage. Now, if he scores a goal tomorrow, that means he will have scored in all 6 games, and he'll be the only player after Cristiano Ronaldo to have done that. But on top of that, the record for most goals in a Champions League group stage is 11, again held by Cristiano Ronaldo. Now, after being snubbed of the Ballon d'Or, we're still talking about that. Garrett, do you think Lewandowski will be, I guess, extra motivated to get those 2 goals, to get that hat trick? Do you think, what do you think the odds are of him, you know, going for it and getting it?
I feel like that's going to be hard to do, because I can't imagine that if he starts, which I would imagine he will, but if he starts, I can't imagine he's going to play the whole match, given how little there is to gain, and how much there is to lose. Right. So I would, he would be hard pressed to get three goals. I could see him getting two, in like a 60-minute, 70-minute appearance or something like that. But that's gonna be a tall order. But I think the thing that's most interesting to me about this match is that Barcelona could miss, you know, could drop out of the Champions right. League in the group stage, and that to me is what I want to see. And I don't think that you have to necessarily throw out, you know, your absolute best 11 available to do that. Since they changed managers, and Xavi's taken over, they've won two games, they've lost one, and they've drawn the one match against Benfica in the Champions League. And so, yeah, I don't think that they need to necessarily. I think when he says he's going to put out the best lineup, I think the best lineup for what you're trying to do could be almost anything. So I kind of like the idea of Nianzu maybe getting a chance in midfield, because I think when he came on against Dortmund, that's where they played him. Mm-hmm. And I think so. I think he's got some interest to him there. But ultimately, I think Sebastian's probably right that it's going to be Musiala. And if it is, I think that probably actually improves Lewandowski's mm-hmm. chances at getting a lot of goals in a little bit of time, because you add more playmakers to the field. So it'll be a tall order, but if any guy can do it, Robert Lewandowski
right.
will find a way.
Yeah, I think that's kind of been his motto for the past year, so that if anyone can do it, Lewandowski is going to be the one to do so. That is all the time that we have for this episode. If you've enjoyed listening, or if you're a regular fan of the podcast, you haven't done this already, please do us a favor and leave us a 5-star review. We would greatly appreciate that. And if you want to get in touch with us, there are a few ways that you can do that. You can email us at superbayernpod@gmail.com. Or follow us over on Twitter @SuperByronPod and get in touch with us there. All of our episodes can be found on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcasts, we're probably going to be there. Thank you for listening. Go out and tell all your friends. And as always, we'll talk to you next time.